This is a continuation of the interview from October 13th with Hilliard Caldwell.
As I stated, both schools were thrown together without any prior orientation or get together by faculty, staff, or administrators.
Was this a new school?
This was a brand new school. They bought 100 and some acres out on Homestead Road to build a White Hart school, to build a high school for both schools. The White Hart school land was sold, which is now University Square. The Black Hart school, as I can recall, was turned into a sixth grade for a year or two to help over relieve the crowding of sixth graders at the three or four other elementary schools that we had in the community. And my job was to go out and to be a supportive administrator to both Black and white ministry, principal, and having knowledge of the Black community and a lot of the students that was shifted out there at that time, I was in close proximity to a lot of the Black parents. And so my job was to be there for them and to give the two administrators support as was needed. So I made sure kids got to class. I was available to parents, particularly Black parents, for any problems. Any kids brought problems to me, I would take them to the administrator, the administration at that time, to try to work it out. Served as a mediator between a student and a faculty member if there was a problem. Again, now this is 2 years after integration. Things were still not right there. It was and I'll never forget when the governor at that time was Terry Sanford, sent about 25 highway patrol, state highway patrol, which was under his command, to the high school as a result of somebody calling his office saying that there was going to be some turmoil at our high school. I'll never forget coming to work that morning, and as I pulled off on Homestead Road into the lot and saw all these highway patrol cars sitting out there, and said, what in the world is going on? And of course there was turmoil throughout the South going on at that time too. And somebody had gotten to the governor's office that there was going to be some problems that day. And of course our job was to try to maintain calm as best we know how. And the kids did get rowdy after about the second class. And I'll never forget that morning. I spent 30 minutes convincing Black kids to go on to class. And they tore out ceilings and broke off. They did some damage. And I finally said, look, you're going to keep this up. And I can't control the white administrator here, the principal. And she gets on the phone, and if she calls 911 and tell them, she needs help in this building, those guys sitting out in those cars, and they were all redneck white. And I said, they're not going to take pity's sake on you. They're riot ready with helmets, with black sticks, or night sticks, as I call them. And I said, if they have to use them, they will use them. And you don't want that to happen. We were successful in calming them down. And we told them that, and I told the two principals, you have got to tell these kids that you'll sit down and you'll talk about the inequity as they exist in this building. One thing was the trophies from the Black High School had been found and stored away, yet all the white, and they took the mascot name from the White High School and brought it in instead of, let's sit down and compromise and get a new mascot.
School song? Was the white high
white,
school?
Mm-hmm. So you see, Black kids at that time felt left out. They tolerated it, but they tolerated it under pressure,
And was there any Black tradition that was kept from Lincoln High School?
Not in the initial opening. So that's where the mistake was. The system should have held off opening the school until all of this was worked out. But you don't let a new building sit after you invested millions of dollars in it.
So this occurred 2 years after integration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that makes Chapel Hill unique, there was the federal government never interfered in ordering Chapel Hill integration. There was a court case pending. It was called Vickers versus Chapel Hill School Board of Education. And that case was a Black family out of Carlboro filed suit against the school system, and it was pending in federal court. But after the school system on its own completely desegregated all of the schools, when the case finally came to came up on the schedule, it was a moot case, and it never, you know, went into the courtroom. But Chapel Hill was never forced, like a lot of communities, you know, the federal courts came in and said, you have to do this. I know Charlotte was ordered, you know, the busing situation still creating some problems in Charlotte, Mecklenburg system now, where kids were bused across town to achieve racial integration. What Chapel Hill did was to integrate the system on a, and there was a word, and I can't remember that word, but it was based on the population of the town, which was about 30% black, 70% white. And they tried, racial balance, that's what it was called. And they sat down and very carefully racially balanced all of the schools based on districts. I know a couple of times there were black kids were bussed out of their community to go way over to Ephesus School to balance it out. I had no problems with that. It worked well, and of course today the black population is dwindling very, very heavily. You walk. I had a parent last year to come to McDougal. She was concerned that her granddaughter was the only black kid in three of her six classes. And she said, what was the problem? And I said, because we don't have enough blacks to balance out the classes.
Where are they going?
Well, I think the population birth rate is declining. And some have moved away. They most certainly can't afford to continue to stay in the area with the high cost of real estate housing. So they move into Durham, where housing is a little, you know, they move up to the other end of the county, where housing is a little more or less reasonable.
Are job opportunities there for the black community?
I think job opportunities is more relevant today than 10 years ago, 5 years ago. And what I tell people, what I tell students, I tell high school students, you need to be prepared for these new opportunities to come aboard. And therefore, you know, and thank God for the technical colleges now, the community colleges we have. That was the best thing ever happened in this state, was to create a technical college in every county. I think there's, might not be one in every county. I think I remember reading somewhere there were 58 community colleges in North Carolina. But the idea was there was one in proximity for every kid in our state, you know. And from our case here, we've got one in there's one in Alamance, there's one in Durham, there's one over in Sanford. So student living right here got three accessible community colleges. And community colleges, I don't know of a kid who graduated from a community college program looking for a job. And they most certainly made it much easier with the transfer program. Now you go 2 years and you can transfer into a four-year school with the any of the state institutions and complete your work. There's so many opportunities out there today. Lord knows, I wish there was a ROTC program had it been in my high school when I came along. I probably would have been a retired officer in the military then, you know. And of course, I remember 1 year I was working for the system. And I thought about the idea of ROTC program in our high school. Man, when I've been, you know, Chapel Hill Carver has this anti-war sentiment thinking. And then I thought I was going to get run out of town. The community would not hear of such, you know, high school, ROTC in the high school. And at our church in Durham, where we belong, three or four of the kids in church are members of the ROTC in their high school. And I think it's a beautiful program, you know. It teaches discipline, it teaches respect, it teaches leadership, and all of the other things that go with making life easier.
I'd like to go back to the integration problems at the high school and hear how the problems that the black students perceived were listed and then how they were handled.
Hmm. Well, there were a lot of problems between black students and white teachers, because black students felt that white teachers didn't really understand their culture, their background, and that was true. That was true. They didn't know how to deal with this kid from this other side of town, if you want to be more.
Did they have black teachers there too?
One or two was kept. A lot of our black teachers lost their jobs during integration, and suffered as a result of integration.
So you had a white principal.
And a black assistant principal. You see, he was not given the full title of the principal. So he was degraded or downgraded from that standpoint. And those black teachers who did go, see, everybody couldn't be hired at the new high school. I can't recall how they selected. I know one or two of the black teachers went from our high school, did go and stay there until they retired. R.D. Smith would be a good one to talk about that from a faculty standpoint.
So one of the issues was the relationships between the black students and the white teachers. And how did they deal with that?
It was hard, as I can recall. It was hard. You know, black kids felt that the teachers didn't treat them right because they were black. And of course, this created, you know, internal problems. I can't remember how it worked out. But we tried to make them. I remember trying to make the black students feel as though, you know, if you've got an issue with the teacher, go directly to the teacher, and face, you know, and confront them, you know, head on, with the problem, with your particular problem. If it's a group, go in as a group, and go at it about in the right way. Ask Ms. Jones or Mr. Jones if we could see you after school, or if we could talk to you a minute or two before class, and let him or her know your feelings about what he or she is doing or not doing in the class. One of the problems I remember is that black kids would raise their hand and the white teacher would always call on the white kids and never equally spread it out, recognizing students. Kids would say, I raised my hand every day for a week and never got called on, so I just stopped raising my hand. I just stopped participating because he or she was not going to call on me anyway. I remember that was a biggie. Back in those days.
I could imagine it wouldn't make them feel real good.
No. He or she probably knew the answer. But problem with whether they knew the answer or not, you need to recognize them. You should recognize them. And we still have some of that going on today. I know during my 6 years at the middle school, I had to go into classes and advise, you know, teachers. And I would spend a lot of time in classrooms as the administrative assistant to the principal. And I would tell the teacher after I came out of the room, I'd see him or her in the lounge, and I'd say, you know, I'd like to offer a couple of suggestions on managing your classroom. And they would say, oh, I'd welcome. And of course, there were some that resented it. But those who welcomed it would come back later and say, you know, thank you so much for that tip because it really worked. Because black kids told me all the time, she never calls on me.
So some of
and, they, and a lot of them weren't aware of that. That situation, you know?
Well, you gave the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. And they saw much more participation by the black students by being open, you know, by equally dividing who you call on.
Were there other issues that you can recall?
Well, there were a lot of social issues because of social economic background, clothing. We had a lot of hygiene problems, you know, that we had to deal with on an individual basis because they didn't have running water, they didn't have hot water, you know, back in those days. And, you know, hygiene is most certainly a very important part of one's daily situation. I was able to deal with that on an individual and on an individual family basis.
That's very delicate. That
very delicate.
Very tough to deal with.
I faced them head on. I just went to the family and I said, you know, I know you don't have running water, but, you know, here are the facts. You know, water, soap, washcloths, deodorant. you know, that keeping your clothes clean. I remember many days washing my underclothes at night in the sink and hanging them up, you know, and I ended up with two or three pairs a day. My wife see one little hole in my shorts, my briefs, she throws them into the dust rag bag. And I'm, in fact, yesterday I had on a pad and I realized the hole got bigger and bigger, and I know the minute she see it, when she washes clothes, she's going to zip it out.
So your mother must have told you to, as my mother did, never wear underwear with holes in it. Because
You never know.
To the hospital.
Exactly. I heard that. I hear it now, you know.
That's all over this country. I met a girl from Iowa who told me the same thing. I had her take it to the hospital for kidney stones. Mm-hmm.
Oh God! And then they were right. You know. I know. I worked in the emergency room my first year in I went to school on Saturdays and Sundays to earn money, and it was amazing. People would come in there, you know, got hurt, and you know they hadn't planned on getting hurt, but the underclothes they were wearing was horrible. You know, and, so my wife made sure I've got plenty of. In fact, we've been packing to move. I discovered I had 35 pairs of brand new socks that I accumulated over the past 10 years. And what I would do, I'd be at a flea market and see some socks on sale, three pairs for, you know, $2, and I'd pick them up and bring them home, put them in my drawer. Just kept doing it. 35 pairs of brand new socks. Well, anyway.
Were there other issues that you can remember?
There was always the equity of pay among faculty, you know, during those days. And no one knew exactly how to solve the problem from the standpoint of, you know, it was obvious. And sometimes black teachers would find out that their white counterparts were making more than they were making, and they both had the same kind of degree. The degree might have from the black might have been from an all-black college. And the white person was from, you know, one of the universities. So the inequity of pay always crept up periodically right after integration. See, now it's more systems have personnel directors. They have, and you have teachers' organization that's composed of blacks and white. And I think the pay issue is now more. On a controlled basis than ever before.
Was the issue of the black principal getting demoted, devalued, brought up by the students? Where you had from what I remember, a man who had degrees that were more in keeping with being a principal than the woman who became a principal.
Again, this is where I'm going to refer R.D. Smith, who served as an assistant principal during his tenure at the high school, could be more. He's the one person that's still living who went through all of that. I'm going from the black high school to the white high school because he taught me during my days. Could probably share more knowledge on that than those of us who were on the outside of the inner circle of the administrative part of the school system and of the high school. We've come a long ways, most certainly have, I tell you. We still have some inequities. But the inequities is nothing like it was when we were coming along, back when it was segregated and then right after integration. Because I will put my high school education and training up against any high school, any other white kid there is. I thank my teachers and my principals for instilling in me the background that I've got today that got me to where I am today. And, you know, here I am, Afro-American, owning 3 acres of land, nice home, retired. Comfortable.
Why don't we end on that?
Okay.
I look forward to talking to you again.
Okay. Let's